Radio Reverb. Brighton Festivals now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Wednesday's Brighton Festival special. We are here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeat at 10pm and 9am the next day.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals. And right through the festival, we're looking behind the scenes, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen. Today, we're looking at themes of migration, which run through the festival.
Hearing about dystopian futures.
We'll be looking back and forward at the 2019 Brighton Festival.
Meeting young people with unique tales to tell.
And we'll have much more here in the next hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Well, it's been an action-packed festival so far, and there's stacks more things coming up. So we've got loads and loads and loads to tell you about. So Rebecca and I are here over the duration of the festival to hold your hand gently and take you through some of those events on the programme. There is one taking place tonight, Wednesday. It's called The New Dystopians. It's a literature event, and it poses a question of what a new dystopia looks like. We're living in a world of fake news and uncertain future. So what can writers teach us? The event is taking place at Brighton & Hove High School. It's on at 8 o'clock, and I'm really pleased to say that one of the authors appearing, Susan Butler, joins us now, hot footing it into the studio. Susan, thanks for coming along.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Let us start with that dictionary definition of a dystopia. An imagined state of society or society in which there is great suffering or injustice, typically one that's totalitarian or post-apocalyptic. So let's kind of nail down that as a concept. It's a very popular theme in literature and film, of course, and George Orwell's 1984 is generally held as that kind of touchstone. Yeah. So your book, Signet, as in a young swan, as opposed to a ring, tells the story of a 17-year-old who finds herself abandoned on an island, living in a house that is teetering over a cliff edge. What was the origin of that piece?
It was interesting. I was actually listening to Radio 4 one afternoon. I was in County Down, just by the Irish Sea, and I could hear the waves and the tides. And but the program that was on was about coastal erosion. And the woman who was speaking in this documentary was talking about how there's a door in her house that her family can't open because of how close the house has become to the edge. Ooh. And the sense of despair and displacement. The local authority couldn't help. Insurance companies didn't want to know. And I started to think about coastal areas all over the place and how this is going to affect our sense of belonging and safety going forward.
So it was literally about the coastal erosion, because I was thinking about that cliff edge metaphor actually feels very real for where we are today.
Yeah, well, I thought that it was a very fitting metaphor, but also the way that an eroding cliff edge gets closer and closer and closer, and you can see it coming, but there's really nothing you can do about it.
So it's set in the main character as a teenager. It's a very interesting one, because as we all know, because we've all been there, teenagers often have the most acute sense of what's wrong with the world. And they're in that uncomfortable state between childhood and adulthood, seeing what's ahead of them and how adults have screwed things up. Was that a deliberate device?
It was. And there's this dividing line as well, I think, between being able to see what's going on and not really having any kind of political power in the world. And so I did want to play with that.
I would say even adults, people over the age of 17, might feel slightly like they don't have any control on what's going on in the world at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a part of what can make coming-of-age stories really relatable, because it's not like a switch flicks and now suddenly we can do stuff. So I think that sense of frustration and trying to push back at something is something we all experience.
Yeah, because to an extent, I suppose, I kind of feel now I can look back at my 17-year-old self thinking, I want to be this, and when I'm that, I'm going to be that. And now I think, I'm in my 50s and I'm still thinking, when is that going to happen? Yeah. When's that, you know, when is that breakthrough, you know?
Yeah,
that coming of age.
Yeah, well, and that's the other way that coming of age is represented in the book Signet, is that all of the other characters besides this teenager are over 65. And so there's also the coming of age in that respect, entering a life stage that actually we don't think about and talk about very much outside of stereotypes.
Can I guess that you're somewhere in the middle of those two ages, and I have no idea whereabouts on there?
I am 38 years old. I'm a middle-aged person.
Oh, I don't know about that. I thought 60 was the new middle age.
That's another discussion again, isn't it? We're middle ages now.
Yeah, oh, hey-ho.
But yes,
I am in the middle. It's somewhere between 17 and 65.
Right. Well, Susan, this is your debut novel, but your performance work also explores anti-racism, anti-capitalism, intersectional feminism, and being the other. Are these themes which also make an appearance within the book?
Yes, absolutely. Well, so, as you've mentioned, I am really interested in structural injustice, and I think that actually taking an approach to writing characters and plots in fiction in a way that doesn't leave things like race and class aside, but actually envelops them and uses them to think about power dynamics can really enliven what we're trying to do. But what I wanted to do here with taking old people and a young person is to sort of think about social constructs of difference, but not always the kind of normative dominant one versus the marginalized one, but actually how sometimes different marginalized groups are interacting with each other.
And quite often without realising it as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. You're in discussion with Joanne Ramos tonight. Tell us a little bit about her book, The Farm.
Oh, I read it, but it's so stunning. I think The Farm is a novel that really does take up this offer of thinking through how race and gender are inflected on labor and value, and also this like commodification of every single aspect of life under late capitalism, done in like a very beautiful and personal way.
Sounds like a great evening.
Can I bung one more? Having already been nosy about your age, I'm fascinated by your accent.
So
your accent wouldn't say to me that you're Irish, yet you said the inspiration for your novel came from sitting on a cliff edge in Ireland. Do you mind? Because another theme of the festival, of course, is migration and people's backgrounds, where they're from, who we are and sense of identity.
Mm. Yeah, as well as being kind of proudly middle-aged, I'm very much a proud immigrant. I moved to the UK in 2002 and naturalized a few years ago. I've got some different homes and different sets of loyalties that don't necessarily have to do with national borders.
I'm being nosy because Melisha and I were talking yesterday and saying how great this year we've had so many people from such different backgrounds coming in.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, for other festivals we've had fascinating people, but this festival particularly is bringing in people from around the world, African heritage, far more than we've seen before, and it's just great meeting lots of different people with different backgrounds and that thread of the festival coming through so strongly.
Yeah, let's get around. Yeah, let's get in touch.
Yeah, well, on yesterday's show, we had Jamil Oluwale-Kosoko coming in to talk about his show Seances,
which is
at the Attenborough Centre. He was great. We loved him. We were total fangirls over him.
We almost locked the door and kept him here.
I wouldn't have blamed you. He's so brilliant. And I feel like Jamil's work touches so sensitively on issues that are at the same time quite particular to the African-American experience and the sense of like living with loss and death constantly, but that are also so accessible to so many people, and so as well as just being absolutely beautiful.
Well, it's taking place at the Attenborough Centre on Thursday and Friday. We're going Thursday night, really looking forward to it. But I was going to ask you, because you're actually in it.
Yes, I will see you there.
How did you end up in it?
Completely randomly.
Fine.
Maybe not so randomly, but I received an email from a Brighton-based producer I know who noticed some thematic intersections between Jamil's and my work. And it turned out that I was going to be in Brighton anyway. So it worked out. Jamil and I have been having some conversations over the last few months. I think the sense of loss and danger and disenfranchisement that I deal with in my work is quite close to a lot of the themes in Seancers.
Well, Susan Butler, fantastic to have you here on Radio Reverb. I'm conscious that you need to disappear off because you've got a show tonight, or you're going to be a part of the event. The New Dystopians, Brighton and Hove High School at 8 o'clock. So we are going to let you go so you can scoot off back there.
But thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming in.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for coming along, Susan Butler. And very good luck with your book, Signet. Hope it goes down a treat. And I hope to have you back in again.
That would be really cool.
If you're doing some other things in Brighton, do let us know and we'll have you back.
Sure thing.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thanks. Cheers. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special. In a few minutes' time, I'm going to be talking to Brighton Festival Chief Executive Andrew Comben. First of all, appearing at the end of the festival, here is Nana Cherry and the track Natural Skin Deep. Nana Cherry, appearing at the end of the festival. She's Saturday 25th of May at Brighton Dome. Natural Skin Deep, taken from a new album. Very, very hard to find a track from a new album that is not potty-mouthed, but managed to do it there. Listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
And we are halfway through the 2019 Brighton Festival. Boom, 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 alarm. Almost exactly halfway through.
Yep.
So it seems an appropriate time to welcome the festival's chief executive, Andrew Comben, back to the Radio Reverb? The Radio Reverb studio. Andrew, it's been a roller coaster ride so far. I keep tripping over myself. There's so much going on. Have you had a chance to get your breath back and take stock of where we're at?
It's been great, hasn't it, Rebecca? And it's great to be back here as well. So thank you guys for all your support. It's really brilliant that this first half of the festival, I think, has had so much that's so rich and wonderful. But, you know, the second half of the festival is packed. I mean, I've had a reasonably steady schedule for the last 12 days or whatever it's been. And now I look at the next lot and it's absolutely jam-packed. So I think it's getting really exciting now, properly exciting. I'm not just sort of hyping that up for the sake of it, but there's loads on.
It's true, because Melita and I dash around trying to capture the key shows, and then looking into next week, it's like, I can't even look at that at the moment. There's so much going on there that looks absolutely fantastic, and also quite tricky to explain. And one of the things Melita and I try to do, and it's going to be helpful having you here today to help us with this, is to really unpick the brief descriptions, which is all you can do in the programme, really, and sort of get more of a sense of what people can expect from that show.
Sure, great.
But first of all, I think one of the things that I've noted is really Rokia Drury's grip on the festival as far as those themes of storytelling and migration and how strongly that's really coming across.
Yeah, I mean, she's been amazing to work with, and she's a really serious thinker as well as an amazing performer. Anyone that saw her at NISO on that first night of the festival knows what energy she brings. But she's incredibly thoughtful, almost introverted, I'd say, which is amazing then to see her on stage and doing her stuff. And so those themes, as you say, have been really, really thought about by her and then the whole team. I really love as well on that first weekend we had the event Wet Sounds, and for me that was almost an emblem of one of the themes. It was deep listening, properly deep listening. You dived into the swimming pool and listened, and I think it kind of ripples, if you like, through the whole of the festival, that idea of really listening hard and trying to get alongside somebody who has a different experience from yourself and trying to understand that from their point of view. You know, it's really easy to say empathy, and we all know what that means and move on. But to actually do it is something else. And I think we've got lots of artists challenging us to do that this year.
Absolutely. I kind of feel like it's all the different shows seem to be parts of a puzzle, but the puzzle doesn't actually give us a complete picture. We have to then imagine and do a bit of work ourselves to get there with it, because everything, the guests that we have, you know, as actually Susan, who was here, was saying that she's been connected up with Jamal to be part of Seances because of the connections that flow through their work artistically and as mentors, writers, etc. So, and I think that's not an individual example. That would strike me, there's probably several relationships developing as a result of this festival.
I hope so, and that's one of the joys of it, that sometimes he can design those things, and sometimes they happen by glorious accident. And I hope that part of those accidents are the audience's experiences, where they're coming across connections that that didn't make sense on paper, but do in the actually experiencing of something. And that's the fun of it, from my point of view.
Now, before we move on to then look at that pact, what's coming up, there's something I want to touch on, which isn't part of Rockia, but part of Kate Tempest's legacy, is the Our Place, which, when I looked at it this year and then sort of downloaded the separate programme, it seems to have exploded into sort of, you know, the Glastonbury events going on. There's so much happening.
Taking on a life of its own, isn't
yeah.
it?
I know, but that's the point as well. It is a life of its own because those steering committees have invested so much of their own time and decision making to it that we're there as a support mechanism, but it's absolutely East Brighton and Hangleton's devising. And yeah, Our Place started in 2017 with Kate Tempest, and it's just grown from strength to strength. And anyone that was at the launch of the festival in February and heard the sort of personal testimony of the members of the steering committee and the impact that working with the festival has had on those communities, and the way that that they've then championed the arts in their own communities, was incredibly moving for me to hear, and amazing for them to relay, I think. So mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. We're in East Brighton this weekend, and then Hangleton the following weekend.
No, and they look great, and I think we'll be touching on Our Place again later in the week, won't we? Hearing more.
Yes, we certainly
happening.
Will. Yep.
Excellent. So you have mentioned in the programmes, it's there. There's so much coming up. What is a standout for you?
Gosh, I mean, I think if anyone hasn't caught my left right foot, it opened last night and it's on for the rest of the week, and it's just brilliant. I mean, Melita said Nina Cherry was potty mouthed. This this takes it to a whole new level.
Oh yes,
and irreverent is not the word, but it's just a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. But I'm really looking forward to Superho as well at the Attenborough Centre, which is Nicole Leckie's piece that was commissioned by Talawa and the Royal Court. It's an amazing one-woman piece of theatre, really special and brilliant to have as part of the festival.
Now, one of the first things to look for, me included, when I get my programme festival is, what's the big outdoor event? What's the free big outdoor? What's going on? It's Museum of the Moon. Now, word on the street is that you're one of the few people involved in the festival that's actually seen the Museum of the Moon in place. What can we expect?
Well, yeah, this is a commission that's part of, we're part of a consortium called Without Walls that commissions outdoor work. New, really interesting outdoor work across the country, and so the moon has been to other festivals, and in fact I saw this in Melbourne, and I saw it indoors in Melbourne. Here we've got it outdoors in Queen's Park, but it's a scale model, an exact replica of the moon from NASA imagery, and it's incredible. I mean, it's completely simple in a way, but totally beautiful.
Now, you're holding your hands out as if you've got a globe in your hand, but I'm assuming it's slightly larger than
it's
a large
lot bigger
football.
than I'm miming at the moment. Good to mime on radio, isn't it? But it is absolutely beautiful. In fact,
so am I. I can say that on radio. Anyway, ha ha.
Our three-year-old sat underneath it and just gazed at it for ages and was kind of mesmerised. And I think it is that sort of mesmeric effect. You know, something that you've seen from miles away, of course, is suddenly brought close, and you get to be a part of it close up.
And I think that's from 6 p.m. at Queen's Park Friday, 6 p.m. Friday.
That's right.
And the evenings.
And right over the weekend.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a beautiful experience in Queen's Park. I can really imagine it in the outdoors in that way. I think it'd be great.
Now, another thing I'd like to know about, it's great having him here to tell us, to explain all these shows, Melita, isn't it? You must come up with something you want to know more about. I've got one, though. Can you tell me more about Trap Town from Wim van der Kebus?
Wim van der Kebus, yeah. He's, in fact, if people remember Hoffa Schechter's festival, that was 2014, and Hoffesh, the amazing choreographer that has been resident at Brighton Dome over a number of years, one of his favourite choreographers of all time is Wim van de Kabus, and we brought a piece of Wim's in that year. And when we sat down with Rocky to talk about her influences, the sorts of work that she really responds to, one of the very first people that she said was Wim.
He's Belgian, isn't he?
He's Belgian. Yes. And so Rocky grew up in Mali and in Belgium, and her father was a diplomat, and she lived in Brussels for a long time. So she saw a huge amount of Belgian choreography and theatre work, and Wim's work was, you know, one of her really serious influences. And so it seemed exactly right then that we brought one of his pieces, and Traptown is the one that we're bringing, that is having its UK premiere here with us next week. And it's an extraordinary piece of work. It's dystopian, it's dark, the music's incredible. It turns into the final scene of it is a kind of no holds barred mad rave of dance.
One night only, don't miss it. Tuesday.
It really is a special piece, and I think it's very hard to describe in the marketing copy, but the experience of it is special, so do get along.
Now, I'm looking at the clock, Andrew, and I'm aware that you are going to be running off imminently. Backbone.
You're saying I'm talking too much.
No. I'm just clock watching on your behalf. Backbone opening tonight at the Dome. This is an Australian physical theatre circus.
That's right.
I had a chat with one of them earlier, and I'm really looking forward to this. I love it when the Australians come to town. They are remarkable. Their physical feats of acrobatics and balancing are stunning.
I know. As an Australian, I feel a complete fraud because the Australians are total masters at circus.
You better start practising.
And I'm absolutely not. But they really are incredible. Gravity and Other Myths with Backbone. So it's a great, great piece.
Terrific. And that runs through to Saturday. We're going to be talking to them tomorrow. Andrew, I'm going to let you run because you've got to go and catch Backbone. Starts at 8 o'clock, but you're going to go and press the
flesh. 7:30,
right. Yeah. But you're going to go have to chat with them.
Absolutely.
in your role.
VIPs to welcome and things
quite.
To do,
yeah.
Haven't you?
So Andrew Common, Chief Executive of the Brighton Festival, congratulations on a successful 2019 Brighton Festival.
Good luck with the next week and a half.
Yeah, you too.
Quick question, though, for next year, because the festival's two venues down because the Corn Exchange and the Pavilion Studio Theatre are being refurbed. Are they back for next year?
They are, yes.
Great. Yeah.
So
great
we're
stuff.
Looking forward to that.
Excellent. Andrew Common, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Reverb.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
For more listings, go to brightonfestival.org. Listen on demand to exclusive reviews and previews at radioreverb.com. Radio Reverb. The sound of your city.
Now to an event that sits in the family strand of the festival and looks a great event for families with children over the age of 11. Amplified is described by its organisers as part TED Talk, part YouTube confessional, but ultimately a celebration of the human story. Following a six-week writing and mentoring project, eight young people from Brighton & Hove will take to the stage at the Brighthelm Centre on Saturday. They represent diverse backgrounds and have unique tales to tell, and they'll inhabit a public space and amplify their words as never before. Well, I spoke to Ella Burns, director of Little Pig, earlier in the week, and that's the company who put the event together.
At Little Green Pig, we are a writing and mentoring charity for children and young people, and we're all about giving children and young people a voice and an opportunity to share their stories. And so we came up with the idea of a really simple idea of having eight young people on stage and giving them 5 to 10 minutes to talk about whatever they wanted to. And we wanted to choose young people whose stories maybe don't usually get heard. And it's about the power of a personal story. Everyone has something really interesting and powerful to share. And we feel these stories deserve to be shared.
It fits into the theme of storytelling and everyone having a story that really runs right through the festival. But there aren't too many young voices, so that's the big difference with this event.
Yes, and that's really important to us, sharing the voices of these young people, all of whom are from Brighton or Sussex, and have really different, interesting experiences that we think will really connect with the audience and give them something to think about and something to take away.
So there's potentially stuff that will resonate and other things that will make people think twice about maybe things that they've made assumptions about?
Definitely. You know, we've got a really wide range of stories from the experience of what it's like to be a disabled young person in a wheelchair to a young person who's an asylum seeker in the UK. You know, these amazing stories. But they all share, you know, moments of sadness, moments of hope, moments of triumph, and we think they will connect with everyone.
What's the age range of the, I think it's 8 people now taking part on Saturday?
They're aged 12 to 19.
And does that vary as to, or are they all equally confident in their presentation?
I think there are some that are perhaps a bit more nervous than others.
Not unsurprisingly.
Yeah, and you know, they all did amazingly well. We worked with them intensively over one weekend, and that was, you know, a lot of time spent on the writing as well as performing. But we hope that once they're on the stage, once they're in front of those people, that they will just really enjoy the moment and, you know, take pride in what they've achieved and in sharing their own story.
Now, the show is here at the Bright Helm Centre on Saturday at
6 o'clock, Saturday the 18th.
It does say that there is a secret host MC person. Yes. Are you going to give me a clue?
Yeah, I can tell you who it is. It's Cecilia Knapp, who is a poet and playwright, and she's from Brighton originally. So we really wanted someone who was from here and has a connection. And she's really excited to meet the young people and also share some of her own poems as well. And we want this event to be for everyone. You know, it's from everyone aged 11 and up. We want an adult to come along and be inspired. We want a 12-year-old to come along being inspired. So it's great to come along, whoever you are, if you want to bring your children or just come yourself for a really interesting, inspiring evening.
Well, I also got a chance to speak with 3 of the young people taking to the stage at the Bright Helm this Saturday to find out more about their involvement. First, here's Jamie. They're 16 and are looking forward to speaking about their experience as an autistic person and how they'd like people to consider how they address others.
I've noticed a lot of people don't know what to say to an autistic person, so I wanted to be there to, you know, tell people it's not what we want to hear. I want to make it kind of funny. My story is more about you shouldn't say these things to autistic people, or you could say them, we just might find them a bit weird or slightly offensive. So I want to kind of say to the non-autistic people, please don't say this.
So what are you hoping for on Saturday's performance? How are you going to feel, and what do you hope the audience will take from it?
Well, I hope that I hope they'll laugh. I just want to, you know, maybe educate people slightly. When I'm on stage, I want people to go, wow, I didn't know that, and maybe take it away. Think, well, I've said that before. I don't think I'm going to say that again if I know it hurts someone's feelings.
People be kinder on the way out than they were on the way in.
Yeah, I think we all need to be a bit kinder. I just want people to be, like, more aware. So, kinder, more aware. That's what I'm going for.
My name is Emma Roberts, and I've always loved public speaking. I saw Malala at this charity event called We Day speaking, and she really inspired me a lot. And I love Oprah, so I've always wanted to share my story and inspire others.
Don't give it all away, but what's your story? Because this is all about the individual stories, isn't it?
General kind of topic is around like self-worth and how you feel about yourself and your soul and being in touch with who you are and your emotions. Yeah, I want people to walk away but feeling maybe learning something new about themselves or become more accepting of themselves, because it's sometimes often it's hard to accept things about you, but when there's someone speaking about maybe something you're struggling with, you're like, oh my god, maybe it's not so bad. And I think it will help me as well as other people just to become more open about your story, not just to keep everything inside.
My name is Naqib Seed. I'm 19 years old. My story is about my 2 years of experience from the day that I arrived in 2016 till now, what challenges, achievements, and people that direct me to the right direction.
So is that arriving in the UK or in Brighton?
Well, arriving to the UK and Brighton.
Okay, good place to start.
Oh, yeah.
So is it a story with lessons to share? Is it a positive story?
So I'm talking about the struggles that I had and how I tried my best to challenge it and fight for my life. And there are some really good achievements that I'm sharing. And there are like 2-3 communities that I'm giving information about them, that they are amazing communities in Brighton and the people that showed me the direction to choose the right way for my future.
Nikab, who along with Jamie and Emma are speaking ahead of the event they're all taking part in this Saturday. And many thanks to all of them for having a chat with me the other day. Amplified, which sounds really interesting. And I have to say, you know, all of their stories so different, but so brave to stand up and be open and talk about some very personal topics. And Amplified is at Brighthelm Centre this Saturday, the 18th of May at 6 p.m.
This is the Brighton Festival Show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandlers. And it kind of leads us in to My Left Right Foot, which Andrew Comben mentioned there, opened up last night at the Theatre Royal, and we went to see it. This is the story of an amateur dramatic society in Scotland. It's done by the National Theatre of Scotland, the actual show itself, and they're looking for a way to win a drama competition. So they thought they'd do something which is groundbreaking and inclusive, and they hit on the idea of doing a performance of My Left Foot, which of course was Daniel Day-Lewis playing someone with cerebral palsy. So the aim of this show is to challenge preconceptions around disability. It was extremely fast-paced. It was a musical. And I have to say, it was absolutely, for me, it was really hilarious when it started off because, as Andrew mentioned, it is extremely potty-mouthed and you don't really expect to go into the setting of the Theatre Royal to see a musical and it's effing and jeffing right from the very start. So that was a bit of a kind of like, oh, that's a surprise.
For me, it was a bit too much of the F and blinding. And also, are you being sponsored to say potty mouthed on this show? Because I think that must be your third reference.
It's just a phrase I like to use.
But, when I did Amdram, we didn't swear like that back in South London in the day. How did I feel about it? I was surrounded clearly by people who were enjoying it a lot more than I was, I would say.
Yeah, went down a storm, yeah.
Yeah, and I found it interesting. I could have enjoyed it as a sort of 40-minute, 45-minute festival piece. It was a bit long for me, I thought. But that said, clearly I was in a minority because a lot of people were loving it and the applause was raucous at the end. So if potty-mouthed is your thing, it's a fascinating exploration of attitudes to disability and where able-bodied people make assumptions about what they should be doing, thinking and saying on behalf of people who are not who are disabled. And the sort of mess that we can get ourselves into.
It's also asking the question about who has the right to play a disabled person and, you know, is it the best actor for the job? So this is not a spoiler. So an able-bodied actor gets the role of Christy Brown, who is severely disabled with cerebral palsy. But in the cast as well, there is a guy who really has cerebral palsy and he's part of this theatre troupe. So he ends up getting the job. And I thought what was really interesting was they all decided he wasn't as good an actor, even though he really had cerebral palsy, as the guy who was what they call cripping up.
I think this fits right into the discussion going on around trans characters, yeah, and who's portraying, yeah, and you know, across the board, whether what is acting and what is inappropriate appropriation. And it's I find it hard to see the right what's right and what's wrong and where you draw the line on some of the grey areas, because acting is playing something that's not you. And where do you stop playing? What are we allowed and not allowed to do?
And this is one of the themes that comes across.
Exactly.
I mean, of course, nobody would dream of blacking up a white actor, though, would they? To play a black character.
I think people don't like it.
Yeah. I thought also the exploration of sexual desire for people with disabilities was an interesting one. I did feel they tried to cram too many issues in. I think I would have liked a little bit more breathing space within it. But anyway, it was wildly, wildly popular. It's won loads of awards. I think it's going to go down an absolute storm.
And you were guffawing very loudly.
I was guffawing, but it revels in its own political incorrectness, and I do like politically incorrect things, and it's politically incorrect all the way through it. So that is My Left Right Foot. That's at Brighton Theatre Royal, runs through to Friday, Saturday. Quickly grabbing my handy aid memoir, aka the Brighton Festival programme, runs through to Saturday at 7:30. There are some matinees as well. So I think it's going to be one of the massive hits of the Brighton Festival, My Left Right Foot.
You're listening to the Brighton Festival Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online with Melita Dennett and myself, Rebecca Sandals.
There is no swearing in this one. Another star to steer by is a children's show which tells the story of Maya, who leaves home and sets sail in a paper boat. Her adventures take her around the world in storytelling and folk tales, especially created for children aged 6+. It's taking place at the Brighthelm Centre. It's on Saturday the 25th and Sunday the 26th of May. I went to meet director David Gilbert to find out what's in store.
Hello, my name is David Gilbert. I'm the director of Another Star to Steer By.
This sounds like it fits very much into guest artistic director Rocio Traore's main themes this year. So we have storytelling and we have travel and migration.
Yes, indeed. I think the story itself kind of takes us around the world. And we start off in Brighton and we go literally everywhere. I'm really excited for people to come and see this because some of us may not have seen other parts of the world, but through this play and using our imagination to kind of bring up these stories about loss, about discovery, adventure, happiness, we can kind of look into ourselves but also look at how other people across the world are kind of seeing themselves as well.
It sounds like it's going to be an audiovisual spectacular.
I can't give too much away, you see. But I think a principle that has been guiding us as a team in thinking about the play is about how can we create something that feels like you're around a campfire. And something that feels like your granddad or your grandmother is telling you, oh, this is how it used to be. And it sort of encapsulates something that just allows you to kind of empathize with each other, those who are listening and the storyteller themselves. So in many senses, it's about going back to basics and trying to capture that moment of being around your mum or dad's feet as they tell you a story that you just can't believe is true.
It's for age 6+. They can be very harsh critics, small children.
Oh, yes, I love that. I love that. We're doing a tour around Brighton in different schools from year 3 on up until year 6. So I'm really excited to get their feedback on, you know, what bits they like, what bits they don't like, and why those things are. So I'm actually really excited because you're so right. They will let you know.
What have been the particular pleasures, joys, and challenges of putting the show together?
I think in terms of the pleasure is being able to, as I said, to discover all of these stories that come from across the world. So to learn about, wow, this actual story exists in time. That's been a really great thing. Also, another thing is that there's quite a few of us working on it. As you know, sound person, lighting person, set designer. So there's loads of conversations that we're having about it. And the actors themselves who are part of the journey as well. I guess the challenge is, you know, how can we stick to basics in terms of how we tell the story, but create something magical? Yeah, it's about really digging deep into our imaginations. And that sometimes could be challenging, just depending on how we're feeling from day to day. If there's sun outside, if it's raining. For the mothers and fathers out there who are looking for something to do over across the weekend, please bring your little ones down to see the show. I can guarantee that you will have a good time.
That's David Gilbert. He's director of Another Star to Steer By. It's taking place at the Brighthelm Centre on Saturday the 25th of May. Two performances on that day, 2 and 5 p.m. and Sunday the 26th, 11 a.m, 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. for ages 6+. Last weekend, which seems like a lifetime away now, was The Great Escape. And I have to say, one of the highlights of my weekend, I have been banging on about this Brighton band for years and years and years. Well, about 3 anyway. They're called Penelope Isles and this is their track, Chlorine. Ah, one of the highlights of The Great Escape for me, Brighton's Penelope Isles and Chlorine, played an absolute stonker of a set at the Salisbury on Saturday night, and then on Thursday night before that they played at the Albert, at the Green Door Store, where the sweat was dripping, certainly from me. Listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show, and currently on at the Phoenix Gallery is Iron Men. It's by Fototala King Masasi. He's a Malian photographer, and his pictures capture the everyday life and work of Bamako's iron workers. Rebecca Sanders has been to see it. We'll be having a chat with her in just a few minutes' time. First of all, let us hear the report from Iron Men at the Phoenix. Our reporter, Josh Sharples, went along as it was being set up.
I've just come outside from the exhibition. It's like Phoenix Brighton. It's the Iron Men exhibition. So the first impressions are that it's a white room as you walk in. photographs are in black and white, so they're very striking as you walk through the door, and all the photographs are of iron workers in Bamako, which is the largest city in Mali, and it's just them at work. And it's very interesting to see that the combination of people at work in ironworks, the artistic way that King Masasa has done that, and then being in black and white, I always like black and white photos. So underneath each photograph is a phrase that King has put on there. And as you look at the photo, you read the phrase, and it can mean different things for different people. It's a new dimension. It adds an extra dimension to what you're seeing and the feel of the whole exhibition. It feels like it's a very personal introspection on working life in a big city. And I feel that he does capture that in each photo. So this exhibition's at the Phoenix Brighton, which is Waterloo Place. And it's on from now to the 26th of May, Wednesday till Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. So do go and check it out. So I'm now going to go back inside and have a chat with a few people. Hiya, what do you think of the exhibition?
I think it's very, very interesting because, the guy or the photographer, he was working no digital. And it's quite unusual nowadays to see that.
Oh, okay.
So very, very interesting.
Very striking, isn't it?
Yes.
I think it's absolutely beautiful. It's a really lovely layout. It's really clear to see, and it really complements all the different photographs. The thing I like most about it is the fact that a bit of text underneath each image. I think it really complements it, and I think personally I've seen that in a few different places. And
sends a story, makes a story.
Definitely. Yeah. They enhance each other.
Yeah. Hi, I'm from Radio Reverb. What do you think of the exhibition?
I think it's really magical. I'm involved in organising the exhibition, so yesterday we were laying out all the work in the gallery space and how it changes when you walk into the gallery and you see the images, and they're quite abstract and mysterious, and there's lots of, you know, sparks and smoke and light and dark.
It's very striking, isn't it? And the eyes got there, actually. With his eyes.
Yeah, there's lots of, very sharp, these very quite abstract forms, you know, and the smoke forms this, like, really strange shapes. And then as you walk towards the images, you start to see these figures coming out and all these other forms. So it's really quite magical. And these are about, you know, these iron workers, these craftsmen who are making these things, you know, out of iron and metal, and so there's the whole sort of alchemy of that process. And then King, the photographer, who provided some written text alongside the work. And they're just really poetic, you know, and they're so they sort of stand alongside the images and they play off of them without being literal about the images. So I find that really quite moving and beautiful.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And that's our reporter, Josh Sharples. He was at the opening of Iron Men. It's taking place at the Phoenix Gallery, 11 to 5, Wednesday to Sunday, right through to the end of the festival. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I've been absolutely chock-a-block. But, Rebecca, you popped down there earlier.
Yeah, and this is another example of where I've looked in the programme and thought, I'm not really sure about that. And I really, really liked it.
Okay.
Now, hands up admittance, I used to do black and white photography when I was a kid. I loved black and white photography. More than 20 fabulous black and white photos, and the whole ambiance in the gallery of these black and white photos, beautifully, what's the word when you developed?
Hung.
Beautifully, they were wonderfully hung.
Okay, right.
That wasn't the word I was looking for. I'm not sure if that's helped me. But anyway, it's distracted
me. Are they large scale photographs?
No, they're not massive.
Give me a sense of scale.
An ordinary TV screen size.
Okay.
That's ordinary, is not a mega screen in my house. That's just so you know.
You haven't got a footballer's wives TV then?
No, I haven't. Okay. And nor am I married to a footballer. Anyway,
Does it tell you the story of the iron workers?
Yeah, what it does actually is it's images of people at work who seemed focused on that what they're doing. A lot of the shots are head and shoulders shots of the workers, intensely working. Clearly, there's hot metal and a lot of them involved. Many have got protective glasses on, and some of them look more akin to sunglasses than goggles to me. So there's sort of health and safety, and you're looking at these men in their working environment. But what I loved about it was not only are they very strong photos, wonderfully lit, I mean, how you get such amazingly clear images of individuals at work on metal with the kind of light you're dealing with, it was for me just how did he do that? But also the little notes, and I think one of the people in Josh's report talked about the fact that next to each photo there's a short sort of phrase and description, and I made a note of a few. So there'd be one word, as if that's the sort of title of the piece, and then a little sentence. So, for example, soon, because happiness is just a step after the impossible.
Okay, it sounds very philosophical.
Yeah. Full time. We like to say that 24 hours are not enough for a day. And one more I'll give you. Reinvent. One of the only things that does not kill is hope.
Okay.
So there's you wander along, and some of them are just lovely and poignant and seem to work the pictures. Mm. Others are sort of random. Some are described as Marleyan phrases or Marleyan sayings. So, for example, when you go in, there's some more information about Masasse. And, he was apparently a powerhouse of Marleyan hip hop and also a successful stand-up comic before he went to his photographic career. And there's a phrase in the opening welcome to people coming along to the exhibition that says, in Mali, we say whoever comes to your home is better than you because the visitor brings a humanity that you do not have. So welcome.
How nice.
So I walked in with a smile going, this is a really nice space. There was also a couple of other people came through while I was there, but I basically had the space to myself to sort of walk forward and peer closely at the images stand around and away. So, I thought it was a cracking piece. And you can go in there, it's free, and you can wander in and spend, 10 minutes there, or you can stand and ponder. Unfortunately, I was, like you, rushing around and had to nip in en route to the studio and would have liked more time in there.
Yeah.
And it's, they're fantastic. I'd like one on my wall at home. I like them that much.
Great stuff. So that is all taking place at the Phoenix Gallery. That is Iron Men. It runs through to the 26th of May. It runs from Wednesday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and it's free. I will get down there. Thank you for Rebecca for all of that. Let's take a look at what's happening around the Brighton Festival. On Thursday, we talked about Backbone opening today. We'll be having a chat with them on the programme tomorrow.
Thursday, there's a lunchtime classical concert that sees the Swiss pianist Jean-Selim Abdelmoula present a programme of Schubert's 6-minute and the expansive romantism of Schumann's sweeping Fantaisie. And that's at All Saints Church at 1 o'clock on Thursday.
Loads of stuff happening at All Saints Church. I think it's a great venue. Mark Johnson.
He wasn't sure about the acoustics.
About the acoustics when he went to see Acca Trio. But I think for classical music, I've seen classical music there. It's absolutely stunning. More music on Thursday evening at All Saints Church. This sounds really, really fascinating. Thierry Pecou's quartet Ensemble Variance present Outre Memoir. And the musicians are linking contemporary music to the humanitarian and environmental concerns of our time. So Outre Memoir in English, it's called Outside Memory. It's a 70-minute, 12-movement work. It's scored for solo piano, flute, clarinet and cello, commemorating the impact of the transatlantic slave trade. So all these cross-fertilisations with Rocio Traore's theme of migration and storytelling.
It's really coming through clearly now. Half of the way through the festival, how much of a connection there is through all these stories. But they're all layers and layers of stuff going on there. So it's not simplicity, is it?
Absolutely not.
So another thing that's clearly not simplistic with lots of layers is seances. And we have mentioned this because obviously the performance artist Jamil Oloway-Kozoku was with us last night on the show. Seances, 2 nights at the Attenborough Centre for Creative Arts, Thursday and Friday, 8 p.m. It conjures up themes of paranormal activity, loss, resurrection, and he explores black identities through his work. So bringing together movement, song, spoken word and a live score. Season, who was in with us earlier, is going to be brought together with the movement and live score and everything as well. It's all going on at the Attenborough Centre. That's tomorrow and Friday, 8 p.m.
Really looking forward to going to see that on Thursday night. Radio Reverb, Brighton Festivals Now. All of the news, reviews and what not to miss at Brighton Festival with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival Hour.
And you've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online. Monday to Friday, 5 to 6pm during the festival, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
Thank you very much to today's guests, Susan Butler, Andrew Comben, the Amplified crew, David Gilbert, reporter Josh Sharples. I'm Melita Dennett. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and we'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Going to play you out with a little bit more music. They are from Burgess Hill and Hurst Pier Point. We won't hold that against them. They played a stunning gig on the pier at Horatio's during the Great Escape Festival. They've got a lovely summery pop sound to finish off the programme. They're called Chapaco Wrestling and the track Cry Every Time. From me, Melita and Rebecca, see you tomorrow at the same time.
Bye. Bye.